Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And none opposed. All right, Andrea, item two, please.
Agenda item two, review, discussion, and possible action on proposed town financial and budgetary policies.
Are there any questions from commission members? Mr. Gephardt.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the commission. So these are our comprehensive set of financial and budgetary policies. And if you'll recall about, about a year and a half ago, the commission, we undertook really doing a significant rewrite of the policies, really taking a look at adding some additional policies, organizing the policies in a more logical format and structure. And so I think we did a very good job. The commission did a good job, and council certainly approved those policies a little over a year ago, I believe in July of 2021. The policies do state that they are to be updated on an annual basis, and so or reviewed and updated on an annual basis, and so that's the purpose of the item for tonight. There were a couple little changes. I would categorize most of these being fairly minor, but the significant one that I did want to point out that I'm open to commission feedback and suggestion on is in regards to the general fund committed fund balance. I am recommending that we increase that from 25% to 35%. But if the commission has different ideas on that level of funding or commitment, then I'm certainly open to hearing feedback and comments. Really, any of the changes they're listed in your agenda item. Just really tried to highlight those for you. Again, many of the policies did not change, but the items that did change are listed there. We are just to give you a sense. Where we ended this last fiscal year, I want to say we were at about 34.5% of expenditures in terms of our committed fund balance for the general fund. So we are very close to that 35% benchmark, and I think that includes, if I remember correctly, the transfer out that is scheduled to be made in this current budget year to the capital fund. So we're very close, to that number. I'm fine with reducing it or keeping it the same, but I just feel like, given where we've been and where we're going, there's certainly, and I'm sure you're all well aware and have heard the news that many think that there's a recession around the corner. If not, we're already in a recession, and so. Just providing additional levels of protection to the town's finances. And of course, I believe, I don't anticipate that this would impact our bond ratings, but I know it's not going to negatively impact our bond ratings, just having an additional level of commitment there in terms of our reserves on the general fund. So with that said, open to questions and again, feedback on the changes before you this evening. Thank you.
Dave, what can the fund balance actually be used for, and under what circumstances?
So, Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, the fund balance, that commitment really is a safety net for the town. There's really not a utilization for it unless it gets budgeted in contingency. If it's budgeted in contingency, then we can do a budget reallocation. Of course, that reallocation would need to go before town council and be approved by town council per the policies. What are the uses of contingency for? Typically, it's when you have a significant change in your revenue collections that is unbudgeted or unexpected, or you have a significant increase in your expenses or expenditures that again is typically unbudgeted. You know, if there's a major, I'll say a major event that happens, like a wildfire or a flood or something of that nature, there where it would require town staffing to increase either police or whatever. It could be a riot. I mean, there are all kinds of different situations, but typically they're unplanned. They can be acts of God or whatnot, unplanned, unbudgeted types of events that would cause your expenditures to increase significantly. That's where we would tap into contingency, reallocate those monies into spendable lines per council direction and approval. But as you'll recall, in the current budget, we included loaded in about $5 million of contingency for the general fund. We thought that was sufficient for this fiscal year. Typically, I mean, again, this is just added protection that really is not intended to be spent on, you know, in any shape, fashion, or form. It's just a buffer against future years and unknown things that could happen in future years.
Are those funds invested any differently than standard monies that we would have?
Commissioner Beasley, can you repeat that question? I'm not sure I heard it.
Yes, the I'll call it reserve monies. Are they invested any differently than normal operating cash?
Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, no. They are invested the exact same way in the town's portfolio. We don't segregate those and do anything differently with those monies in terms of how they're invested.
Is it typical, Dave, to change the percentage of the reserve for different economic times?
Madam Chair, members of the commission, I believe it is, or it certainly ought to be. I mean, you'll find all kinds of different different approaches to this issue. You know, to me, I think there's reasons why you would want it to be higher, and to me, it all boils down to risk of the town. And so, you know, one of the things that I've said historically, not necessarily here, but other places, is that if you're, you know, looking at risk, if your revenue streams are more, limited in terms of, and you're more reliant upon a smaller subset of revenue streams, then that would be a risk issue for a local government, that they would want to have a higher reserve fund balance or a higher committed fund balance that they would not want to necessarily spend upon. But just to provide, again, protection that things are going to, you know, things are going to be okay in future years, just in terms of economically or otherwise. So, you know, I think our revenue streams are pretty diversified, but again, I think there's not really any harm in trying to increase it if we can, but that's subject to, again, the commission, your thoughts, certainly the council, and what their thoughts and opinion is on this issue. I just think moving forward, when you identify that there are potential issues coming down the road in future years, next year and the year after. I think I read even today, some are saying that there's 100% forecast for a recession. I think now I don't know how they got to 100%, because I think 100% of anything is difficult to attain. But apparently a lot of people think that we're trending the wrong way economically, and we just want to make sure that the town is protected, its operations are protected, and that we can that we're able to deal with that. And I've always been one that's always tried to look and prepare to the extent that we can. I did that at my last job prior to the Great Recession. I was able to kind of see that things were changing with the housing market and so forth, and we were property tax-based where I worked, and so I was like, well, we need to put as much money away as possible to try to protect my employer from layoffs and brownouts and stuff of that nature, and so we were able to, we were successful at doing that. But and I kind of feel the same way with this issue with the town. Like, we just, this to me, this is just good, makes good sense. If we have the resources available to do it, I don't really see a downside. But that percentage piece, you know, whether it's 25, you know, 25 is the current, so I think everyone's comfortable with that. But whether we want to raise it to 27.5 or 30 or 30, like, I don't, like, I'm fine with you know, alternative proposals and suggestions there. I'm not sold on 35%. I just think we're close to 35% right now. I think that's a good target for us to try to hit by the end of this fiscal year. But again, open to feedback and comment on that.
So that segues a little bit into one of my next questions, is how did you come up with the 35%? Was there any kind of rationale behind it?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, my rationale was we were at 34.5% projected through the end of this fiscal year, and trying to hit 35, I think, was a goal that was worthy of trying, striving to attain. But yeah, you know, if it's a target and it's a goal, I always want to shoot upwards and not, you know, I don't think there's any joy in hitting something that we've already hit. So,
Dave, is there, excuse me, my voice is shot. Is there any way that we could create a benchmark to be able to change what that percentage is based on how well the town is doing? I'm assuming that we would like to have a higher percentage when things are going swimmingly well. And if in fact we get into a recession and we start seeing some revenues drop or whatever it might be, we would want to reduce how much of that money's to be set aside. So I guess the question is, have you given any thought to how we could create a benchmark to be able to do that?
Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, that's something I could give some thought to, kind of a floating type of benchmark, depending on, is what I'm hearing, is a floating type of benchmark dependent upon financial, current and forecasted financial conditions of the town. That's
the question.
Yeah, that's something that I have not given consideration to. I think typically bond rating agencies, and this is where this really becomes real for the town, because, you know, a target is a target, and if you achieve it, that's great. But it becomes real financially when it actually starts impacting bond ratings. And so I think that's, that would be something that I would want to have discussion with our financial advisor, and potentially even bond rating firms, to see how they might view that, and what that lower level, how low could we go before it would start impacting our bond ratings. That's not something we would want to compromise. We're at AA+ right now with a 25% target, and I think that's great. It's the highest in Southern Arizona, and the second highest rating that you can achieve. So to get up to, the goal for me is to eventually get up to AAA, if that's feasible. But I think that reserve target is going to have to increase even further. And so it's just, to me, it's a matter of just, you know, taking a very methodical step-by-step approach towards increasing that and seeing if that can, you know, in fact, at some point get us over the hump to get us to a AAA rating.
Yeah, I think it would be a great idea to talk to the rating agencies, or at least our advisor, and find out what kind of reserve level exists with AAA rated entities, public entities.
I know when having reserves is important, and you have to kind of balance having the reserve there to meet difficulties and unforeseen things, as well as trying to fund the services that the town wants to have. What was the purpose of committing this balance in the first place versus leaving it assigned or unassigned?
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, Vice Chair Mason, I think the purpose really was, as far as I'm aware, was just to provide protection to the town. I'm not sure that there was any, I'm not sure whether bond ratings factored into it. They perhaps did. This was kind of a policy that I inherited from my predecessor, and so so without having that discussion with Stacy, I really couldn't tell you. Just because I don't know, but I would assume that that was just it was something that was born out of the Great Recession era, where we saw significant financial impacts to local governments, and it was just a means of protecting the town against that recession and future recessions.
Because we've been through some pretty significant downturns in the past several years, and this 25% is, we've never really had to even use it. And I'm wondering, as part of the policy, is that maybe we should have criteria in which we would want to use that 25%, because you mentioned contingency, but that's really separate from this amount. So I would suppose that if some type of emergency or some type of severe economic drop would necessitate having to use that. But so I was just thinking, before I get to the percentage, is maybe we should have a criteria for when we would use it. And the fact that it's committed means that obviously we have to have mayor and council resolution approval to use it. And then if we do have to use it, when should we replenish it? Should we have it replenished by the next fiscal year or next two fiscal years, depending on what the situation is? But some sort of, because if we do have to go use it, we obviously want to replenish it back to whatever level we established. I just had one thought as another option of going to 35%, is that since we haven't used it for several years, leave it at 25, but try to come up with a floor for the unassigned. Because the committed balance on your statements, it kind of shows over here that there is some kind of restriction against those funds. The unassigned, as you know, there's no restrictions whatsoever. So let's say we have pick a percentage, 5-7% floor. So what you're doing is you're still maintaining the committed balance, but you're also getting your unassigned balance up, because basically that could be used for any purpose. Again, you have control over that. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to have mayor and council approval, but you'd probably still get that to use it. So my thought was maybe to consider keeping it at the 25, but maybe try to have some kind of a goal or floor for your unassigned, so that your unassigned doesn't get too low as well, because you don't want to have a negative unassigned, obviously, which you could have depending on what other restrictions you have on your general fund. So that was just my thought. I don't have any real disagreement with going to 35. I just thought I'd come up with another option to think about.
I appreciate those comments, Vice Chair Mason.
One other thought was, you know, the last year or two, we've got a lot of money coming in from the state. So I think some of that, in addition to having good revenues, was reasons that we were able to do a lot of the stuff we were able to do. So considering that you still want to take 5% out for construction, anything over 35%, you want to put that in construction, but going to that higher percentage, will that kind of prevent you from doing that? So other considerations I thought to think about.
And another thing is, I remember when we were looking at the budget right after COVID, or kind of in the middle of COVID, and talked a lot about, if we can't do, you know, what are the line items on the budget that we would maybe have to pull back on? What are you going to do if we really have issues with revenues coming in? So you've got your 35% and your 25%, but you can make decisions to not do some projects, right?
Yes, Chair, certainly we have authority to, or the ability, I should say, to try to reduce spending and cut costs in the moment, for sure.
And going up 10%, what is that going to do, kind of to your point, what is that going to do to the current budget? Is it going to do anything? Are we going to have to skinny anything else down to get there? And is that, are we willing to do that, to reduce other expenses?
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I think my comment to that is we'll have to see how this year plays out, because really, you know, we're looking at trying to forecast out again what this year is going to look like, and we're just barely into it. We're a quarter of the way into it, essentially, and so so yeah, it does. There are potential impacts for this fiscal year in terms of spending and trying to really tighten our belts and whatnot to try to get up to that 35% benchmark, assuming that that's what the Commission and Council wants to do. So.
Any other questions? I did have one other comment on the... Now I can't find it. Here it is. On the matrix you have in there, you need to change that also. There's a, I think it says 35% reserve policy under general fund, so you need to update that. It says 25%, you need to update that to 35%, just FYI. It's in a really small font, so you probably didn't see it. Are we going to discuss all of them, or any other comments?
If there are, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, if there are other comments or feedback or edits necessary to the other changes, I'm willing to discuss those as well.
Okay, and Commissioner Beasley had a question. Or
on page 11, and we're talking here about investments, 6.10 refers to money market mutual funds that are always priced at a dollar. The reality is there are multiple different kinds of money market mutual funds, and the only one that I'm aware of that is guaranteed to be priced at a dollar is a government securities, a treasury-based fund. So I'm just wondering, from a terminology perspective in here, maybe we should just simply admit that it is a treasury-based fund that is always priced at a dollar.
Commissioner Beasley, I can make that adjustment.
Another comment on revenues, which is actually on page 21 of this document. A reference is made in 2.0 to user fees and charges. And the council is supposed to determine what the appropriate cost recovery level is, and where feasible and desirable, a town should seek to require full direct and indirect costs. When was the last time that was actually done? And I'm talking about parks and rec fees, aquatic centers, parks, you know, all that stuff.
Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, the parks department actually undertook a study this last fiscal year. Requesting to bring that to council for approval for inclusion in the current budget, but it was determined at that point in time that the timing of that was not the best, and so I believe that issue has been kind of, I don't want to say tabled, but kind of put off until potentially this upcoming budget year or budget season. where it may be proposed to council for inclusion in next fiscal year's budget.
I would certainly encourage it, because obviously with inflation being what it is, the costs of providing those services are soaring. It was my understanding that the actual pricing of those services from a cost management perspective has not really been done for a long time prior to, I guess, what they have recently done. So it's kind of something, particularly if we have rampant inflation going on for a few years, that the frequency of that be moved up.
Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, I would concur with your comments.
Just one comment on that. Isn't the full cost recovery more in line with charging outside agencies? Because I don't think with park fees that you ever come up with a fee that's going to be total cost recovery, because then you would probably price people out from using the services. So isn't that normally more for outside agency charges?
Vice Chair Mason, that's correct. The full, if you want to get technical about it, full cost recovery is for outside agencies. Our public, we don't really ever, especially as it relates to park user fees and charges, we don't ever anticipate that we're going to charge our residents the full cost of providing that service. That's that gets subsidized, so to speak, with sales taxes and other types of revenue sources that the town collects. Just one more comment there. Really, what we were looking at when we undertook that analysis, yes, we are undergoing inflation. We were concerned that with a potential recession, that discretionary revenue sources may naturally decline, that there may be a pullback from our public in terms of those user fees and charges. So we were very conservative in budgeting those in the current budget. There's one more thing I wanted to mention. Must not be important, but yeah, we were looking at updating those, and I know Parks was fully supportive of that, but we were just not quite sure that the timing was in the best interest of the town. Moving forward, I think everyone can understand that there are cost increases and terms of chemical costs and other types of costs for the pool, utilities, electric costs, natural gas costs, and things of that nature that the town is absorbing. And so this next fiscal year, that might be a good time to incorporate that increase in that study.
Commissioner Beasley?
One last item. On page 25, on the debt policy, you indicated earlier that we are a one notch below a AAA. If in fact our target is to become a AAA, this would probably be the ideal place to put that in as a target. And at the same time, when that's done, there's a certain debt capacity that the city would have to be able to maintain certain ratings. So maybe we ought to find out kind of what that is also and somehow incorporate that in here.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Beasley, I think my comment to that is that and we went through this when we issued our parks and rec bonds and even our pension obligation bonds. One of the questions I had of our bond rating firm was, okay, we're not at AAA. How close are we? And what would it take? And, they're very reluctant to provide specifics on what it would take to become a AAA. One of the things that that we kind of assumed was because we don't have a property tax in the town, that might be, you know, that's a strike against the town just from the standpoint of having a more diversified and stable revenue source to rely upon. I think when you look at some of the other communities in Arizona that are AAA, they have a couple things. One of them is a property tax that, again, just provides additional stabilization and a revenue stream that is very predictable. But other than that, they also have significant reserves set aside. And so, to me, those are kind of the two issues. I don't anticipate, because a property tax would need to be approved by the public, I don't anticipate that that's ever going to happen in Oro Valley. And as an Oro Valley resident, I'm supportive of it not happening because I'm paying that tax as well. But the reserves is something that we can control and can try to improve upon. And so I think that was kind of more, more again, kind of the direction going back to our earlier discussion on the committed fund balance and trying to bump that up a little bit. They're a little bit protective. They don't really get into specifics, but they said we were really, really close. So that's about the best that I can do with sharing with that for you.
I suspect the real issue is the size of the town. I doubt you're going to find a AAA that's got 45,000 residents.
Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, there are towns out there that are AAA that are a little bit smaller than us. I mean, nationally, I don't know about, can't really speak to Arizona. I'd have to go and look and do that research. I haven't done that research in our state, but I think if you look in our state, I know Scottsdale is a AAA, but they're significantly larger. So I think you're probably correct there, but size, when it comes to rating, it's not necessarily size that matters. It's more how you're managing your financial condition. And it's, again, it's just a risk quotient. And the lower risk you are to bondholders and repaying your debt, the higher you're going to be rated. And when you're talking about risk, it's diversification of revenues. It's how well you're managed, and from a executive level, you're having strong policies in place, financial policies and budgetary policies, and then also your reserves. It's kind of a combination of a whole bunch of different factors, just like it is with your credit score, personal credit score. So,
thank you. Any other discussion? Go ahead.
Yeah, just along the lines in debt. I didn't realize we'd go into all of this tonight, but what I've been kind of looking at is that, with a water fund, you have a coverage ratio that you're supposed to have, from the viewpoint of being able to pay your debt service. So I was thinking maybe not quite that formal within the general fund, because we use the general fund to pay all of the bulk of our debt service. And of course, if you get into an economic situation where things go down, and you have to cut expenditures, but you can't cut your debt. You have to continue paying that. So I was thinking of maybe having a kind of a goal or something that's where the town establishes at what maybe a percentage of revenue that you would like to see that debt service not exceed, if it's 10% of revenues. I was trying to look at it based on last year's CAFR, looking at our highest debt service, and it was around 5%, of course, but that's not including the two issues that we've done. So looking at those, what's the highest debt service year we have, and if maybe we want to keep it around 5%, 6%, whatever percentage you think, is just as a guide so that when we start to issue debt, we have to look at the debt service, because the general fund has to absorb that. And if you start, I know we do good things with the debt, that's the reason to have it, but if you want to do raises, or if you want to do other capital projects, or if you have other things that are going to compete, the debt kind of takes pr- priority to that. So that was one thought I had that maybe we could put in the policy as some sort of debt service goal that we want to stay under when we decide, you know, to issue debt in the future.
Vice Chair Mason, I like those comments.
Thank you for all the comments. Any others? And is there any expectation of us providing any more input? Or are you good with what we've given you?
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, I'm good with the feedback. I can certainly bring this back to our next meeting with some additional edits and incorporating some of the feedback that I've heard this evening. And hopefully we can move forward. And if there are additional even edits after that, I mean, this was kind of a proposal, a draft, as these things always are, and just trying to keep improving and continuously update and improve it so that we end where we want to end as a town, and that we're doing really incorporating kind of best practices and protecting the town and its interests financially. So thank you.
Great, thank you very much. Andrea, item three, please.
Agenda item three, presentation and possible discussion of the town's FY22-23 financial update through August 2022.
Good afternoon, good evening, Madam Chair, Commission members. I'm pleased to be presenting our financial update through August. I will say at the outset that things are looking great so far. We haven't really adjusted any year-end estimates at all for the most part. Just 2 months into the fiscal year, it doesn't usually happen until we get a little more data under our belts, but we'll jump right in. First off, I just wanted to note just some overview, things to keep in mind. All amounts that are presented as actuals or year-end estimates are obviously preliminary. They haven't been audited. They are unaudited, and they're always going to be subject to change. Our year-end estimates, we typically do not include any adjusting entries that happen for the audit at the end of the year. Such things would be, you know, marking our investments at market value and that sort of thing. Our year-end estimates shouldn't be relied on as definite or precise predictors of where we're going to end the fiscal year. You know, obviously, they are considered informational only. That's how we look at them. They are fluid, and they're always based on what we currently have available to us in terms of data. When the town staff assesses our financial performance, you know, what are we mostly looking at? What is our emphasis? Our emphasis is comparing our actual data to our adopted budget, to our council adopted budget, and that was our plan for our funds. And so that is sort of what we're gauging in terms of how are we doing? You know, how is the economy impacting certain areas of our revenues and expenditures? We're looking at our actual data compared to our budget. Overall, I will say through August, revenues are performing quite well compared to budget, and expenditures are trending as expected. So we'll start off with the general fund revenues. Our local sales tax is looking great through August. It's right on track there at about $4.3 million, or 17% of budget. We are seeing some healthy growth in contracting sales tax year over year, as well as restaurant and bar. Our state shared revenues look great as well. Actuals are about $2.6 million through August, or just under 15% of budget, and those are trending as expected. Charges for services as well, just under $500,000 collected, or 16.1% of budget through August. Our licenses and permits, we did budget, as a reminder, 170 single-family residential permits, as well as some pretty healthy commercial activity. Actuals are trending as expected. Our budget does include some of those commercial projects that I mentioned that are expected as we progress through the fiscal year. Our grant revenue actuals are about $46,000, or 10.2% of budget. Those are trending as we would expect through August. And then all other includes those other categories. Our intergovernmental revenue is a big piece of that, but then our interest income and our miscellaneous revenue. We were at just under $160,000 or 7.5% of budget through August. I should mention on our interest income for July, we had a pretty sizable loss is what we had originally posted. And we wanted to kind of go back and take another look at that entry. Just do another thorough review. It involves a lot of manual data entry, a lot of updating of figures and cells. We actually identified one figure that had not been updated from the previous month. And as a result, I guess it's a bit of good news. It's still a loss for July, but it's very minimal. So you will be seeing an adjustment for July coming forward. And as a result, we actually have a slight gain through August for interest income. So in total for the general fund revenues, we've collected about $7.8 million or 15.4% of budget. And again, as I mentioned at the outset, we're not adjusting any budget variances at this time, so still sticking to budget for year-end. Moving on to the expenditures, personnel is just under $3.5 million through August, or 9.9% of budget. It appears a little bit low, but as a reminder for July, our first payroll of July actually was accrued back to the previous fiscal year. So in terms of actuals that have hit fiscal year 22-23, it would appear low through August. As well as our pension contributions are a little low compared to budget, and that is because we are awaiting our updated actuary reports for PSPRS and CORP, and are going to be making that additional contribution towards our CORP plan to pay off that unfunded liability, as well as any additional PSPRS contributions that we need to make. And so at the end of the fiscal year, we will be assuming budget for those numbers, but if we are looking at actuals, they are probably going to be a little low through August as a result of that. Operations and maintenance for the general fund, we've spent just over $2.2 million or 18.9% of budget. I will mention that our actuals through August include our claim settlement payment that we made. We actually made the payment last fiscal year, but because we did not close on the property until July of this year, the claim settlement per our auditors is actually going to be booked in this fiscal year. So that is what we've done, and the actuals include that amount through August. Capital, this is to be expected through August, a little low year to date, and we've only spent 3.3% of budget. But as a reminder, a good chunk of that capital budget includes our westward look improvements. It includes some sizable IT needs and then various equipment and non-CIP capital in various departments. Our transfers out through August, we have already booked our full transfer, budgeted transfer out to the debt service fund. So that is the actuals you see there. The rest of the transfers consist of the budgeted transfers to the capital fund, and those happen three times a year. So the first one will be booked in October. In total, expenditures in the general fund, $7.8 million or 12.1% of budget through August. And same as on the revenue side, no variance to budget projected at this time. Here's the chart for the general fund. Revenues, $7.8 million compared to $6 million last year. Expenditures, you can see the $7.8 million compared to $15.4. That is probably due to our PSPRS payment that we made last fiscal year that you see in the prior year actuals. As a reminder, we've budgeted to use fund balance in the general fund of $13.8 million, so that was planned. Because we are not revising any of our estimates right now, we're still sticking to budget. That would land us at a fund balance of about $16.6 million. And as Mr. Gephardt mentioned, 34.5% of budgeted expenditures. And that does exceed council's current 25% policy by about $4.6 million. Moving on to the highway fund. Licenses and permits is a small category in that fund, but those are trending a little over where we would expect through August. So we may revise those as the fiscal year progresses. Our HERF, or state shared revenues, gas tax revenues, look great. We're at 16.1% of budget, or about $663,000 through August. And then all other is our miscellaneous categories, insurance recoveries, interest income, that sort of thing. What you see there, the large portion of the actuals is actually a prior fiscal year refund from a vendor for some credits that we did not receive. In total, highway fund revenues are at about $675,000 or 16.2% of budget. And again, just that favorable budget variance from the refund that we received from that vendor. The expenditures for the highway fund are tracking as we would expect. Personnel, we've spent about $128,000 or 10.7% of budget. Again, same with the general fund. It's going to appear low through August because of the payrolls in July, with just one having hit the current fiscal year. Operations and maintenance, we've spent just under $150,000 for that category, or about 18.2% of budget, and those are trending as expected. And then capital, our pavement preservation program, the fall treatments will get underway in October. In total, we've spent about 6% of budget in the highway fund, or about $278,000 through August, and no budget variance projected at this time for the highway fund expenditures. Here's the chart for the highway fund. Pretty vanilla. You can see the revenues up just a smidge compared to last fiscal year, and expenditures about the same, about $300,000 through August. We did budget to use about $489,000 of fund balance in the highway fund, again, because of that little vendor refund that's in there, slightly less than that, and then an ending fund balance of about $722,000. Moving on to the Community Center Fund, things tracking as expected there. On the contracted side, our actuals are about $474,000 or just under 12% of budget, and those are trending as we would expect through August. Our town operating revenues, we've collected just under $122,000 or 13.7% of budget. Our recreation program revenue is seasonal. We get a lot of activity in the May-June timeframe when parents are signing their kids up for the camps, the very popular camps that happen there. But our member dues, we have noticed are slightly below budget through August, and they're a little less than prior year actuals. So we're just kind of keeping our finger on that and watching it. And as we get a little more data, we may be taking a look at revising some estimates if we see the need. Other revenues include our half-cent sales tax revenues, those HOA contributions per contract, and then our interest income and some other miscellaneous revenues that hit the fund. We are just under $500,000 in actuals through August, or about 13.7% of budget. In the Community Center Fund, total revenues are just under $1.1 million through August, which equates to 12.9% of budget. And just 2 months into the fiscal year, we wouldn't be revising any year-end estimates at this point. Expenditures for the Community Center Fund are trending as expected as well. On the contracted side, we've spent about $635,000 or 13.4% of budget. Town operating expenditures are about $214,000 or 12.6% of budget. Those are also trending as expected. Our capital outlay, we've spent about $178,000 through August, which is about 6.7% of budget. We've got a pretty hefty capital budget for the Community Center Fund this year. A lot of one-time items. Just as a general reminder, some of the larger projects that are in there are the ADA improvements. Those are budgeted at $750,000. But we also have our Vistoso Preserve safety improvements that are budgeted in that fund. That is a $350,000 project. We've got some pretty sizable equipment replacements, both on the golf side and fitness side. We try, whenever it's feasible and whenever it makes sense, we always try to pay cash for our replacements versus leasing. And so we've got some pretty sizable outlays in that fund this fiscal year. And then the transfers out, same with the general fund. We've already booked our full transfer to debt service. So as a reminder, the bulk of that amount is the Parks and Rec bonds, which I believe the debt service this year is about $1.8 million. And then the rest of that is the Series 2016 Community Center Energy Efficiency bonds that we issued. The rest of that budgeted amount for transfers is going to include, per council direction, a transfer to the capital fund for the Gulf irrigation to go towards the cost of that project. You can see we actually have revised the year-end estimate in this fund for the transfer because we are going to do, per their direction, as much as we possibly can to keep that fund balance at exactly $1 million at the end of the fiscal year. So based on what we've already seen in terms of how the fund finished last fiscal year, we've been able to bump up that transfer just a little bit here through August. So that's good news. In total, our expenditures in the Community Center Fund through August are about $3.05 million, or 23.2% of budget. And again, the only variance that we are showing through August is being able to boost up that transfer to the capital fund a bit for the irrigation. Here's our chart for the Community Center Fund. You can see revenues current fiscal year, about $1.1 million compared to $1.3 million last year. And then expenditures, $3.1 million compared to $1 million last year, which looks scary. But again, that's the full debt service payment now for the Parks and Rec bonds. That alone is $1.8 million. So we did budget to use fund balance of about $4.7 million. That's just a result of our heavy one-time capital projects that we have budgeted in the fund, as well as some increased O&M. You can recall, per the adopted budget message, that we do have the maintenance for the Vistoso Preserve in that fund as well. We are also seeing some pretty sizable increases for some one-time building repair and maintenance. It's obviously an aging facility, and it's going to have quite a few needs over there. So we've got a few things budgeted there, both on the golf side and the fitness side. So that is the reason for some of those increases. Budgeted use of fund balance, 4.7. We're going to go ahead and use 4.9 and direct that additional amount to the irrigation project, and that would land us at a fund balance of exactly $1 million per council's direction. And with that, we'll take any questions you may have. Thank you.
Chair Beasley.
I'd like to ask some questions about the interest income account and, in reality, the unrealized gains and losses account. Isn't there a better way for us to book unrealized losses on securities other than running it through an interest income account? And in conjunction with that, a comment was made here that realized gains throughout the remainder of this fiscal year make up for the loss. Well, interest rates are rising. As interest rates rise, the price of securities goes down. So unless you know something I don't know about the Federal Reserve, I would expect that interest rates will continue to go up and you'll create more of these unrealized losses.
Well, Commissioner Beasley, as I mentioned, we actually did have a gain in August that more than made up for that slight loss in July. So it remains to be seen, I guess. You know, they've got a pretty good track record. PFM is our investment firm that we utilize for our investments. And, you know, we did see a little bit of pain last fiscal year with our mark to market. But we're hoping, you know, they take a pretty proactive approach to readjusting some of their investments, and we're hopeful. But again, we are in a very volatile environment right now. Mr. Gephardt is welcome to add to that if you would like.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Beasley, I'm not sure and I'm open to suggestions here, but I'm not sure where the unrealized gain or loss, where the appropriate place to put that other than in investment income would be. And I'm sure you're well aware, but really what we're talking about here is just a paper loss that gets amortized, or a paper gain, depending on which way, again, as you said, and you're absolutely correct, which way interest rates are going. If they're going down, you're more likely to have a paper gain. If they're going up, you're more likely to have a paper loss. And because of the inverse relationship to the price of securities, with interest rates. And so, you know, typically what we've done, we don't show those unrealized, well, this is not typically what we've done historically. We have not shown those unrealized gains or losses until the end of the fiscal year, because they are difficult to predict, because no one truly knows. I mean, we all have a sense and an idea, but no one truly knows which way interest rates are going to go. We know that we're in a rising environment right now. Historically, over the last time certain, I don't know, six, seven, 8 years, they've been fairly stable, if not falling, and then they've kind of risen a little bit and then kind of dropped back down. And so obviously we're kind of in a unique environment right now as it relates to inflation, the approach that the Fed is taking to try to combat that. And at some point, I think we're going to see, again, I don't have a crystal ball here, but at some point we're going to see potentially a slowdown in the economy, which then will have some real impacts on inflation, and likely will have some impacts on interest rates as well. I don't know what the timing of that looks like. I don't think any of us really do. I think, again, I'll go back to my initial comment here. I'm not sure what you're proposing in terms of, I'm willing to listen to a suggestion, but I'm not sure what you're proposing in terms of a better way to handle that. We don't reflect it on our monthly financials, again, just because it is a paper gain or a paper loss, and we don't want to provide some sort of false sense of either fear or ecstasy that things are going worse or way better than we anticipated, and it's not something that we budget for, because and simply for that fact, because we just we don't, it's just too difficult, we just don't know what's going to happen. But so, you know, I think investment income is the appropriate place. We do try to keep it with interest income or realized gains and losses, you know, and then we just don't really reflect that until year end when we actually get the data in and then book that mark to market. So
isn't there a way to simply separate out the actual interest income, which would be an accrual or actual cash received, from a mark-to-market unrealized mm-hmm. portfolio value change? This way you won't have to answer this question to me a lot.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Commissioner Beasley, we in fact do that in our accounting records in our Munis financial system. Our unrealized gain and loss is in a separate account from our normal interest or our realized gain or loss or investment income that we get either from the state treasurer through our LGIP investments or through PFM or other investments. We even have a small balance with the county seizure accounts and things that the police collect. So, we do in fact segregate it out. But for purposes of how we report it, again on a monthly basis on the monthly financials, what you're really seeing is realized gains and losses, and then the unrealized doesn't get reported until June at year end.
And I'll add, they're also presented separately on the face of our financial statements, the two different amounts.
What can we do with securities that we expect to hold to maturity? CDs, treasuries, something like that, that while the interim, there might be unrealized gains and losses, but in reality, it's in a category of securities or potential end use that it makes no difference.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Beasley, I'm not sure. I'm sure there's something that we could do. I'm not sure I would be willing to do it at this point. I think I understand the comment and where you're going with this in terms of, but I think what if I'm understanding you, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but or having a misunderstanding, but what you're asking is if there's something that is really really secure, very, very short term in nature, and it's considered an unrealized either gain or loss. Do we consider that as in the kind of the same bucket that we record our realized gains and losses? And I would hesitate to do that, I guess, at this point. I think we're comfortable with how, you know, with where we're at and how things are currently being recorded and also reported. Again, I think that, you know, to kind of take a half in, half out approach and to try to splice out a significant or a, not a significant, but a discrete, investment option, I think just might add more confusion to the issue than necessary.
Now, the only point I'm trying to make, Dave, is that it's not a negative income. And I think the terminology creates some confusion. And someone who looks at the financials and sees that kind of a statement and really doesn't understand the markets, they won't understand what you're trying to say.
Madam Chair, Commissioner Beasley, I agree. this is kind of a complex issue for most people to understand, and I do my best to try to simplify. I think we, you know, our finance team, we're not trying to make this issue any more complicated or confusing than it already is for most. It does have its complexities to it, or it's not kind of a straightforward it's a little bit difficult to explain to kind of the average citizen out there if they question this. So again, that's kind of why we try to, that's why we take the approach that we do. And in fact, I think in the September council meeting, I addressed this issue at the end of I believe it was at the end of the monthly financial report when we had some questions from council members on the issue and whatever, and I just wanted to make it very clear that an unrealized loss, it gets amortized. It's not a paper loss. It gets amortized until a security matures. Most of our that is the position that we take on. I don't know. I don't want to misrepresent here, but well over 95% of our securities we hold to maturity. Simply from the standpoint that we take very conservative positions, and sometimes, you know, sometimes there are instances, they are rare, but there are instances where we will sell prior based upon the recommendation of our financial advisor at PFM, but they are not into, there's no benefit to them with how they're structured. They're not into flipping securities for the sake of flipping securities. The goal there is really to analyze what the current offerings are that are in the marketplace, and if it makes sense to rebalance and restructure our portfolio to provide additional return to the town, but also decrease risk and get to a certain, again, from a risk standpoint, a certain maturity that we want so much in 1 year, so much maturing in one, so much maturing in two. The longest that they go out is 5 years. So they try to rebalance from time to time. So that can create losses, but then those get more than recouped by actual investment income with the new securities that they purchase with the increased yields. So.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you, Wendy.
You're welcome.
Okay, it's time for council liaison comments. So, Mayor Winfield, please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Salverson and commission members. At your last meeting, I was absent. I was in Minnesota visiting my daughter, but I'm happy to join you today. Since your last meeting, Town Manager Jacobs submitted her resignation on September 23rd. Deputy Town Manager Chris Cornelison is serving as our acting town manager. The HR department has begun the process of securing the services of an agency for recruitment and so forth. At our last council meeting, that was the 5th, the Naranja Park, which I know this group has had an interest in, was an update was provided during the park master planning process. Estimates for the build-out of Naranja Park were at $17 million. What was presented to us on the 5th was $33 million, so a significant increase. Staff is going to be coming back on the November 2nd, as what's planned, to present another update proposal for councils for consideration. Mr. Gephardt already spoke to an item for tomorrow night's council meeting that may be of interest to the commission. You also, so I won't speak to that, on October 26th, we'll have a ribbon cutting for the completion of the Conquistador golf course irrigation and tennis pickleball courts. That's at 10 a.m. at the community center. You're certainly welcome to join the ribbon cutting. And then if you would care to, on the 27th is the State of the Town at the El Conquistador. I believe that's around noon. Is that?
Your speech starts at 11:30.
Okay, starts at 11:30. So if you came at noon, you would have missed the speech. But you're certainly welcome. There's a fee for that, and I believe there still are tickets available. But that completes my report. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have any other, any future agenda items we'd like to discuss? Any of the commissioners? I know we had quite a list from last time, so it'll probably take us a little while to get through those. Okay, good. All right, any motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Okay, Chair Beasley?
Second.
Mason? All in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All right. Thank you very much. We are adjourned at 5:15.